Curious City is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is Curious City. When I say the words family business, what do you think of? The mom and pop shop around a corner? The dysfunctional family from Succession? Well, last episode, we looked into the oldest family business in Chicago. And this got me thinking about family enterprise in general. Starting a business itself is a lot. But bringing your family dynamics into said business, no matter how well you get along, it has to be risky.
If you think about how a family runs versus a business runs, totally different set of rules.
This is Jennifer Pendergast. She's a family enterprise consultant and professor at Northwestern University. We're going to talk more about what she means here, but I wanted to start off with some history first. Jennifer says, historically, a lot of family businesses that started in the U.S. were in a few specific industries.
Europeans, Eastern Europeans' experience with building stuff, like making equipment, making, you know, bending metal, basic industry type stuff came over from other countries with those skill sets and then brought them to the Midwest.
And she says between those immigrants bringing their skills to the U.S., the American auto industry, and the agricultural-based families already here, the oldest family enterprises were more concentrated in Midwestern areas like Chicago and Detroit. But these days, the types of family-run enterprise are way more broad.
Where you see them are things where family's name and reputation really matters. Construction, heavily family-based. You know, I'm essentially betting on the person. Real estate ownership. You name a city and I could tell you who the families are that are the real estate developers, you know, and convenience. Okay, the biggest convenience store chains in the country in every region of the country are typically family owned.
Even veterinary clinics. A family business could really be anything. And it's Jennifer's job to research and consult with families running these businesses.
I describe people who help family enterprises as on a continuum from being the person that sits you down on the couch and talks to you about what it was like to grow up in this family and why you and your brother can't get along, to the other end of the spectrum being someone more sort of a business strategist. And then there are people like myself who have a PhD in strategy and study sort of how do we create structures and systems to support families so that even if they don't get along as people, they can get along as business owners.
Yeah. Perfect person to dive deeper into why family members end up going into business together, what happens when they do, and whether or not they should. Let's get into it. So what are the typical circumstances under which family members end up in business together?
It's interesting. I was talking to a colleague of mine who's also at Kellogg at the business school at Northwestern with me, and he said he had done a poll of his students and asked how many of your family's businesses start out with the intention to be a family business. And he said it was less than 10% of them. So, you know, most people start a business either because they're creative and they have an idea, or they may start a business because they don't want to work for someone else. And then you work really hard to make that business viable, make enough money that you can make enough money and it's going to survive. And then you start to worry about, is this something that would last long enough that I would want to hold it in my family going forward? Wow. So really in the beginning, you're just focused on, can I get this business off the ground? Does it have legs? Once it gets to that point, then there's an interesting question to say, well, gee, is this something that I would want to keep in my family over time? And if so, how do I think about bringing my children into the business? And so that's the tipping point, is that the business becomes viable. Occasionally, there are people that might start out with a sibling and say, hey, do you want to do this together? Or a husband and wife team may say, hey, do we want to do this together? But that's less common than someone just starting something and thinking, I want to start a business, and then worrying down the road what's actually going to happen to this thing once it gets to stability and seems like something that I may want to keep and grow.
I hear you with those a couple examples. It sounds like peers, you know, like two siblings, a husband, wife, or two partners in a marriage. Is that the typical kind of pairing, or do you know if there's, you know, a certain type of family grouping that usually ends up in business together?
Yeah, I would say spouses less so, just from the practicality of, if I'm starting this and I'm making no money and I'm having to invest a lot in it, somebody needs to keep the lights on in the house.
So have typically, the consistent, reliable.
The other person's doing something else, right? Yeah. I don't want to put all my eggs in this basket. So I don't bring them in, or maybe I bring them in part-time. There's this sort of old school model. Guy starts the business, wife's doing the bookkeeping on the dining room table at night after she's doing her other job. Yeah. Sometimes there's the pairing of the kids coming in. There's a wonderful family that we work with through the center in Miami. The family emigrated from Honduras and they came into the US and they're doing this business. And when they got out of high school, each of the kids, the dad was like, I need you to come work here to help sell stuff. And they joke about like selling frozen plantains out of the trunk of their car as the supplier of these things they were importing from Honduras, but they were manual labor, right? And I need you to do this because I can't afford to pay someone else. So what can I afford to pay you? You can stay in the house and you can eat here and you don't have to pay rent and you're going to work for me, right? So that as well could be a way you get up and running, is kids are free labor. You hear great stories about younger kids like sweeping the shop floor.
Yeah, for sure.
Going to work and manning the phones when the receptionist is on vacation. Yeah. So sometimes people get brought in just because they're cheap labor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And sometimes they're the ones who continue it on into the next generation.
Well, they're the ones who know all the employees who, look, they saw what it took to get this up and running. And a lot of people will say, I want to continue this business because I want to respect and honor the hard work that my parents did and the risk that they took for our family to get this started. I saw what this took. It was literally, you know, blood, sweat, and tears. And so I respect that. And I want to be part of helping that continue. So if you do have that experience where they have the opportunity to be there from the start, I mean, certainly sometimes it can create animosity. Like, I didn't get to go on vacations and I didn't get to practice with the baseball team or whatever that may be. But it also creates a deep connection and a pride and respect for the hard work that it took to build something.
Yeah. Yeah. I do wonder how long a business typically stays in the family. I don't know if there is a typical number you can give. I'm sure it depends on so many variables. But yeah, can you talk about that?
So there's research that shows that like only a third of the businesses make it to the next generation. And a third the generation beyond that. Why I feel like that's a little bit misleading is, say you were doing one business and you decided it wasn't going to be viable, but you took the money from that and created something else. That would look like the business went away, but technically the wealth you created didn't go away and you created something new and it created a foundation for your family to do something else.
Okay.
There's a difference between being an owner operator. I own this business and I operate it day to day, and being an owner investor, which means that I'm proud of this business. I think it's a good investment. I want to keep it. But I'm going to go off and do something else.
Sure.
And I'm going to hire people to run it on my behalf. That still is a family business. It's just not an owner operator business. These are all big decisions to make, right? And then are going to affect whether or not the business ends up staying family owned.
Very complex, just like families themselves.
Exactly. So add both of those together, right?
Right.
I would say, imagine, like, I adore my brother. If I had to be in business together with him, the business would not go well, and I may not adore my brother. Then you don't have a choice. Like, when you go to Thanksgiving, it's about the business. It's not about the family. A lot of people talk about the business as like the second child.
Wow.
I was in a classroom with a set of families a couple of weeks ago, and one of the guys said, well, my dad had three sons and the business was the daughter. And let me tell you, she was the favorite.
Like, oh,
That's an interesting dynamic
so,
to deal with.
Right? Well, Jennifer, do you come from a family business background, or did you have enterprise like that going on in your family?
No, it's an astute question to ask, because a lot of the people in this field have come from that background. I actually came from it very much from a pure, I'm a business strategy professor by training. I did strategy consulting.
Got it.
And I sort of made my way to this field. But the thing I would like to say is I'm a huge advocate of family businesses, because why I stayed doing this just in the family realm for the past 25 years is I find them fascinating. And I think family businesses are able to leverage business strategies that other people aren't, because they don't sell in tough times. They make investments when other people wouldn't. They make commitments to their employees and their communities that other people don't. They tend to have higher values and integrity around what they do. So I've been fascinated to see, one, the sort of complexity of how do they manage around all these difficult things and still stay in business. And second, the unique things that they can do by being family owned. So to me, the strategy side of it is just fascinating, how that works.
Yeah. What are some common mistakes that you feel like you go into a consultation or a consulting relationship and you're like, I can already see this, and this is where you went wrong?
Yeah. So common things. One is, if you think about how a family runs versus a business runs, totally different set of rules. So in a family, I try to treat everybody equally. In a business, I reward people based on their merit. So it's a meritocracy. That's a whole different set of rules.
And it needs to be done for the business, but it's foreign to our family structure.
Exactly. Yeah. We're doing something we've never done here before. We haven't watched this happen. We don't know how this is going to work. So I think the lack of recognition that what we did before isn't going to work for us going forward, the lack of willingness to project a few years down the road and see what inevitably is going to happen and put plans in place for it are probably two of the biggest things that you see. And then the other thing is really, look, since technology, globalization, certainly, but then post-COVID, like the degree of complexity of any business that you're in has escalated significantly, as well as the degree of uncertainty and unpredictability.
Sure.
And so you don't succeed unless you have a business that's operating at its best capacity. You don't want the family dynamics to get in the way of that. So acknowledging that business is hard enough and that we almost need to bubble wrap the business and figure out how we can take all our family stuff on the side and keep it in a place that it doesn't harm what's going on over here. And also recognize we're going to need the very best, most qualified people to run this place. Also, people realized over the past few years that the degree of risk that they're undertaking as business owners and having all their wealth tied up in one thing. And you'll see people coming out of some of the generational transition over the past few years and just say, we're done. We'd rather take the money and put it in a safe place than have it at risk, because we thought we were fine. And then all of a sudden things, you know, the world changed on us.
Yeah. For the family businesses that stay in the family for years and years, whether it's, you know, they're operating or they're just investing, what would you say they're doing right?
So for those families, I think first and foremost, it's from a very young age, developing a pride in the legacy and the story of this business. Mm. I'll give you an example, Busch Beans, they've got the great dog that's Duke the dog, and they tell the story about their founder having a tiny general store. The story is there was a shoebox in the store that had money in it. And if a child came in there and didn't have shoes to go to school or something basic, that the employees in the store could give them either what they needed or give them money to get what they needed. They now have a division of the company that sort of manages the family's money, and it's called Shoebox. Who wouldn't want to be part of keeping that, you know, legacy alive, right? So I think that pride in ownership is a huge thing. And then the other thing I would say is the recognition that it takes work.
So say, for instance, I'm starting an audio production company. You know, I'm just kind of sticking with the industry I'm in here. And 2 years in, I get it off the ground. It's going great. And I'm like, okay, you know, my cousin went to school for audio production. You know, maybe I'll bring him into the business. And, you know, he's poised. He's ready. What is a number one piece of advice you would give me about thinking about how and whether or not to bring my cousin into this thing with me?
So what I would tell you is that if you bring him in, it's going to be a whole lot harder to let him go than any other person.
Okay.
Right? It's hard to let anybody go. Anyone I meet that actually would really like firing someone, I'm like, that's a little scary. Who likes firing people? The other thing I would say is having an honest conversation with him or her or them to say, I would love to have you here. Let's put in what I would call a set of rules of engagement. So this is the deal. Either we're going to be partners in this or I'm going to be the boss. Here's what you get to decide. Here's what I get to decide. Here are the things that we're going to decide together. Here are my expectations of you, even down to the basic, like show up to work on time. Like here are what it's going to take to be successful. Very simplest. You see that I see this in huge family businesses. Sometimes no job description. Like what's your job? Well, I just do and I get this done and whatever. Everybody sort of knows. I'm like, you should write that down.
Yeah. Treat it like a business. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Treat it like a business. So here's the job. That's a perfect way to think about it. Actually, this is a business. If you were going to hire it to anybody, offer anybody else, what would you say? Here's the job description. Here's the pay. I think the other thing to think about is you're going to make that cousin, like, would you ever be willing to make that person an owner in the business with you? Or is this really about I'm the
not the cousin?
You can't see your head. I can see your head. It's like, no way that's happening. But then be clear about that. You are an employee of me, and this is how this is going to work, right? But I think the more people can just be transparent up front and treat it as if that person were not your cousin, how would you set it up?
Okay.
I think a lot of times the problems become because your expectations and that person's expectations are totally different and you don't realize theirs are different than yours.
So getting on the same page off rip.
Also, don't let things fester. I think that's the other thing in family. Like, I'm not so happy with this person, but geez, you know,
yeah.
I also have to see him with my aunt and uncle at Thanksgiving. So I'm not really going to have this conversation versus let's just have the conversation because otherwise, if I'm sitting there complaining to my sister about my cousin, eventually that's not going to go well.
Yeah. How do you think about having a family business and the importance of that, given where we are in our economy right now? Is it important? Does it matter? And if so, why and how?
I think it matters hugely. I think on the balance, families, businesses care more about their employees. I think they care more about their communities. Mm. I think they are more likely to be honest in their business dealings. And in fact, there's great research on trust. Edelman Public Relations Firm does they call it a trust barometer. Do I trust the government? Do I trust businesses? Do I trust whatever institutions?
Mm-hmm.
Businesses are not particularly trusted. Family businesses are a lot more trusted. I trust that the leaders are going to do what they said they're going to do. They're much less likely to pull out of small communities. And so I think they're a backbone of the economy in a way that we don't want to get rid of. It's funny. I remember someone telling me this story. You know, they're in a smaller town and their family's an employer there. And they said, look, if I shut the plant, the people that aren't employed anymore, I see them in the parking lot. I see them in the grocery store. Mm. I see them in, you know, if I have a house of any kind of worship, I see them there. Like, it's not like I can get away from this, right? So it's not nameless, faceless. It's very personal. And I think we want that.
Jennifer Pendergast is a family enterprise consultant and professor in the John L. Ward Center for Family Enterprises at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. Jennifer, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Oh, the bear! That's right.
So first of all, I'm a huge fan of the Bear. I did the research to figure out all the places that they went and tested food in other restaurants. And then I went on a tour of all of them. And I'll tell you, go to Margie's Candies, which, by the way, is like a family business that's like over 100 years old. Absolutely amazing. And get a big old turtle sundae. It's crazy. But I will tell you, the emotion among the siblings there, that's a real thing, right? So you see, this is hard as anything for them to do this together, but the heart that they put into that and the commitment that they show and the pride in this, and also the desire to fulfill their brother's legacy that's no longer there, is a huge, huge thing. In family businesses, there's often someone who's in the room who's not in the room. And that person not in the room can be driving the dysfunction of the room, but it also drives why we're all staying in the room.
This episode of Curious City was produced by me and AC Valdez. Susie Ahn is our editor. Curious City is a production of WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. If you have questions about Chicago and the region, send them our way at curiouscity@wbez.org or visit us at wbez.org/curiouscity. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you next week.
Rise and shine. WBEZ is serving local stories for breakfast every weekday morning from 5 to 11. Tune in on the WBEZ app to hear what Chicago's talking about as you start your day.